Welcome to the Secret History and Mythology Club. This is your host, Muhammad Ra'fat, and this is the very first English episode on this show. Why is that? I'd say because, you know, my podcast only targets Arabic speakers, but since there's a lot going on and there's a lot of misinformation out there, this is a very important topic that I wanted to share with English speakers, mainly in the West, because their media is doing a horrible job in telling them the truth. Obviously, we're here to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I will be doing my absolute best to be objective in this episode, and I'll be providing links to every single source that I use. We'll be talking about the origins of the conflict, when did it begin, the current situation that we're in, and the steps that led us to this current situation. It'll be like an all-inclusive guide to what's happening in Palestine since basically 1500 BCE. So I hope you enjoy it, and now let's jump right in. This is a special episode, Palestine. As I've mentioned in the intro, our story begins around 1500 BCE. This was the very first recorded evidence of a city in the region of Palestine. Jerusalem, at the time, was the capital of an Egyptian vassal city. A vassal city, for those who don't know, is a state or a country that has its own rulers. However, those rulers owe their allegiance to another ruler, in this case, the Egyptians. The residents of Jerusalem at the time were called the Canaanites, which are descendants of Canaan, a biblical figure. These are the very first group of people that history can verify inhabited the area of Jerusalem. Now, a very common argument that you would hear from Israelis is that they are the descendant of Canaan, and that they have the right to this land, it's their promised land, etc., etc. However, this is not really true. In an article published on National Geographic, a researcher called Andrew Lawler discusses a study published on Cell.com regarding this little conflict, okay? So a group of people, they're like smart with genetics and stuff, they went to the area of Palestine, to archaeological sites there, and then they collected the bones of 73 individuals who are thought to be Canaanites from the Bronze and the Iron Age area, okay? These people took these bones and did some fancy-smancy stuff, and then they basically got the DNA sequence of these people. And what they did next was that they took this DNA and they compared it to the inhabitants of current-day Palestine, both Jews and Muslims and Christians, basically everyone in the area. And the results that they came up with is that all the inhabitants of the area, like Muslims, Christians, Jews, whatever lived in this area, shared 50% of their DNA or more with the people in the study. Which means that Israelis do not own this land by themselves. It was not like it was the city or the land of their great-great-great-great-grandfathers from like 3,000 years ago. It was actually a shared area. It was a shared land. They shared it with Muslims and Arabs. Anyway, moving on like 1,000 years maybe, in the year 587 BCE, Nebuchadnezzar II of the Babylonian Empire, and that name was a hell of a name to pronounce, really. The only thing that helped me pronounce it was that I think it was the name of Morpheus' ship in the Matrix in the first part. But anyway, this guy from the Babylonian Empire, he came in and conquered Jerusalem and kicked all the Jews out of it. Like, no Jews are allowed in the area. Like you don't get to live here anymore. Just go find somewhere else to live and you'll be in peace out there, but not here. After that, the Persians came and they defeated the Babylonians and they restored the Jews. Like, they invited them back. They're like, hey man, sorry about that guy from the Babylonian Empire. He didn't mean that. Can you please come back to live with us in Jerusalem? And so they did. After that, Alexander the Great came, he conquered Persia and Jerusalem, and he kept the Jews in place. However, things started to go south in 63 BCE, like really south. The Romans invaded Jerusalem, okay? And after multiple wars with the Jews, the Romans took control of the city and prevented any Jew from entering the city. Like you would die if you're a Jew and trying to enter Jerusalem, okay? They would torture them, they would do like really bad stuff to them. So the Jews, like, for the second time, were, okay, guys, you know, we're going to just head out. I never liked Jerusalem. I'll just go find somewhere else to live in. And everything stayed like this for a couple hundred years. Like, I think it was, the year 638 AD? Of course, I was not trying to remember this. It was written in front of me on a script. I was just doing it for dramatic purposes. But anyway, in the year 683 AD, the Muslim Khalifa Umar ibn al-Khattab entered Jerusalem after he defeated the Byzantines who were occupying it at this time. One of the first things that Umar ibn Khattab did when he entered Jerusalem was inviting all the Jews back into the city. And so Muslims, Jews, Christians, they all lived in Jerusalem happily and safely until the year 1099, when the Crusaders came. The Crusaders came and they basically killed anything that was not Christian. Like, I guess they killed even chicken who were not Christians, okay? They killed the Jews, they killed the Muslims, and only left the Christians. It was horrible. Like, however, the Crusaders luckily did not spend that much time in Jerusalem, and only 88 years later, Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi came and defeated the Crusaders, kicking them out of Jerusalem, and again, inviting all the Jews and the Muslims back into the city. These past two stories, mainly the one by Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi and the Muslim Khalif Umar ibn al-Khattab, they basically emphasize the fact that we as Muslims do not deny the Jews the right in Jerusalem. They definitely lived there and they definitely like had a place in Jerusalem. That's not our complaint here. That's not our issue. This is not the problem that we're creating all this fuss about, okay? This problem is coming later in the episode. You know, you'll see what all this action is about in a couple minutes. Anyway, one Black Plague, Mamluk occupation, and an Ottoman occupation later, the British army captured the city from the Ottomans in 1917. You know, this area has seen a lot of action over these like 600, 700 years. Anyway, once the British took the city from the Ottomans in 1917, then came the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was a statement made by the British government in 1917 after the First World War, and in that statement, they supported the establishment of a national home for Jewish people in Palestine. This declaration was contained in a letter dated November 2nd, 1917, and was sent to Lord Rothschild, the leader of the Jewish community in Britain. This declaration came only a couple years after Theodor Herzl visited Palestine. Those of you who do not know who Theodor Herzl is, he's basically the founder of the Zionism. He's like the father of all Zionists on the planet. But regardless, this is not our issue here. Our issue is that only 2 years later in 1919 and all the way till 1929, over 100,000 Jews immigrated to Palestine. Those were the legal immigrants. Many, many more migrated illegally to Palestine. And this continued until the end of 1931, when 17% of the population of Palestine were Jews. And the vast majority of those Jews weren't Arabs. But that was not the only problem. Those Jews, the new ones, they needed homes to live in. So they were expelling Arabs from their homes. You see, the Balfour Declaration promised the Jews a new home, but the British Empire never bothered building one. Instead, they used the existing homes, the ones that belonged to Arabs. And this caused a massive uproar in the Arab world. This is the origin of the problem. Our problem is not that Jews live in Palestine. Jews used to live everywhere in the Arab world, even in Egypt. However, our problem is that European Jews, they moved in to Palestine and they started kicking Arabs out. There is a huge misconception out there that the Jews started moving to Palestine after the Holocaust, when Europe didn't know what to do with all the Jews and all the survivors and stuff. But no. The Jews were migrating to Palestine way before that, like nearly 30 years before the Holocaust in 1919, as I said. Anyway, the tension kept rising until the year 1935, when Sheikh Izzeddin al-Qassam, who was the leader of the Palestinian struggle against the British mandatory rule, was killed by the British army. After that, hell broke loose. This was the largest revolution in Palestinian history. You know, the Arab Springs revolution? They were nothing compared to this. The strikes lasted 3 years from 1936 until 1939, when it was bloodily repressed by the British, assisted by some Jewish forces like the Haganah or the Irgun, which committed multiple terrorist attacks on Palestinians and eventually even started fighting the British people. After the revolution was over, things calmed down a little bit in Palestine since everyone in the world was occupied with some guy with a weird mustache who was trying to kill everyone in World War II. However, after the war was over, and with it the Holocaust, the fate of the surviving Jews became a problem the West had to deal with. Britain, however, did not want to repeat the mistakes of the first immigration, so they put heavy restrictions on Jewish immigrants to Palestine. However, they failed, like, miserably. You know the meme when there is this very, very sleepy security guard who is just moving the device so effortlessly across bodies entering the... Yeah, that meme. I'll link it in the description. But anyway, this was basically what happened after the Holocaust was over. The situation kept deteriorating until the United Nations, with all its glory, decided to step in. They just were like, hey, you know what, guys, we're going to partition this country so that you can live in peace all with each other. So they adopted Resolution 181, which partitioned Palestine. However, the United Nations, being a new organization, they didn't really have much experience with partitioning countries. So they went back to the closest reference they could find. They went back to the year 1939 and did exactly what Russia and Germany did to Poland. They divided Palestine into three areas: an Arab area, a Jewish area, and Jerusalem in the middle as a common ground. They didn't even bother changing the order a little bit. No. They exactly copied what Germany and Russia did. Now, I don't need to tell you that this did not go well with Arabs at all. Like, it was chaos, just pure uncontrolled chaos. Tension sparked so high between the Arabs and the Jews in Palestine, and things kept deteriorating for the next months. The Jews were supported by the previously mentioned military groups, the Haganah and the Irgun, as well as World War II veterans, so the fate of the Arabs was decided before the fight began. And on May 14, 1948, the State of Israel was established and recognized by many countries around the world in just a matter of days. It's like they were waiting for it to happen. The next 25 years saw four different wars between the Arabs and the Jews. A war between lots of Arabs and the Jews in Palestine in 1948, and another war between Egypt and Israel, France, and England in 1956. Another war between Israel, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, and multiple other countries in 1967. And a final war in 1973 between Israel, Egypt, and multiple other countries in the area. And this was the final war that Israel lost. And after that, peace came. A peace treaty was established and the wars calmed down a little bit. However, the atrocities in Palestine did not. This past part was all information found on Western media or Western websites. This is your part of the story. All the information that I've said here, with all the violations, are found on the United Nations websites or on Wikipedia or in articles, or it's just Western stuff. However, obviously, that's not the whole story, because if that was the whole story and if your media was doing its job properly, I would not have had to create this episode. The upcoming part will not only rely on English sources, but it will also include Arabic sources. So without further ado, let's jump into a list of the Israeli atrocities committed over the past years. The Deir Yassin massacre was the first massacre committed by the Jews against the Palestinians. It happened in the 19th of April 1948. This massacre saw the death of over 200 men, women, and children in Palestine. 30 years after that, or like to be exact 32 years, also in April, there was the bombing of Bahr al-Bakr school in Egypt. This is a school situated in Port Said in the south of Egypt, and Israel just airstriked it. They just killed 30 children and injured 50 more. And wait till you hear their excuse. You know, some things never change. Similar to what they said when they bombed the Baptist hospital in Palestine, the Israeli Minister of Defense at the time, Moshe Dayan, said, and I quote, "We have checked and rechecked, and there was no mistake this time. Maybe the Egyptians put elementary students in a military base." You see the audacity, like they've been doing this for like 50 years now. And every time they have the same excuse. Hamas is hiding in hospitals. Hamas is hiding in refugee camps. Hamas are using children as human shields. You know, man, a very good counter argument I've heard to this is that Hamas does not need to use Palestinian children as human shields. They have Israeli prisoners if they wanted to do so. But they wouldn't do so because they treat them nicely. And I think everyone saw that old Israeli woman who was released from Hamas captivity a couple weeks ago. She kept talking about how everyone treated her nicely, how they provided her with medical care, how they ate from the same food that the prisoners ate from. Everyone was just nice. However, on the other side, you have Israel, who kept a Palestinian prisoner for 2 weeks, torturing him until they killed him. For real. Let me ask you this. When was the last time you saw a headline talking about anything bad Israel did? Like, have you ever seen something along the lines of, Israel keeps thousands of Palestinians prisoners every year without court or without evidence or without them doing anything wrong, torturing them, raping them, and killing them. No, no, no. You don't see all that stuff. You don't see any of that. All the stuff you see is Hamas is bad. Palestinians are bad. They're all threatening the existence of Israel. Israel is so nice. They're just super nice people, super chill. They just want to live peacefully, but they don't want them to do so. Hamas doesn't want that. They just want to keep bombing them. It's their hobby. The Israeli authorities have imprisoned over 100,000 Palestinians since 1967. Now, granted, I'll give them that. They give them trials. Israelis, they do trials. They have like military courts, which have a near 100% conviction rate, but they're trials. They get their rights, they get lawyers, they get everything. In addition to that, on average, hundreds every year have been placed in administrative detention based on secret evidence. That's what the Israelis say, without charge or without even the 100% conviction rate trial. They don't give them that. And you know what even makes this worse? Is that they keep these prisoners in Israel, not in Palestine, which is against international law, which requires that prisoners of war be held in their own countries. Back in 2008, there was a bit of a problem between Hamas and Israel. Hamas used tunnels to move around the city since it's not really safe for them. So Israel raided these tunnels. Hamas considered this a violation of a ceasefire that existed at the time and started shooting missiles on Israel. Of course, Israel retaliated with more missiles and there was just dead people everywhere. However, the interesting part about this conflict or this mini war was the casualties. Okay, and wait till you hear this, okay? In this whole thing, like this was a war that lasted for a couple months. 13 Israelis died, okay? 13 died, including 4 by friendly fire. I'm not joking, I'm not making this up. Like, there were 13 Israelis, 4 of them died by friendly fire. 3 of these remaining were civilians, okay? And the injuries were like 500 and something, okay? On the Palestinian side, however, from 1,100 to 1,400 were killed, in addition to 5,000 wounded. I'm not gonna comment on this, I'll just leave the numbers speak for themselves. This is the end of the episode. I hope it showed you a clearer view of what's really happening in Palestine. Now, I do not need to say that killing civilians or children is bad, but before the West asks us to condemn Hamas, can they please do the same for the Israeli government? How many more innocent lives must be killed for us to get over the hypocrisy and double standards that we see from government officials or Western media? As of last year, 70% of Palestine's 1.9 million population lived on humanitarian aid. 70% of the population, okay? So if you're living under such conditions, and even the devil came and offered help, wouldn't you follow him? Don't blame the Palestinians for fighting back. Blame your governments for allowing such actions by Israel in the first place. A couple days ago, the UK's Prime Minister, he went on TV and said he does not support a ceasefire because that would be giving Hamas a breathing room, I think. And a couple days after him, the UK's immigration minister said Israel did not break any international laws. Well, if bombing hospitals, killing children, women and old people, cutting food, fuel and electricity, using white phosphorus, which for you who don't know is a substance that burns and sticks to flesh while burning, if all this isn't breaking international law, I'm really curious to what you think is breaking the law. In Russia's invasion of Ukraine, 9,700 Ukrainians died and 18,000 were wounded in a year and a half of conflict. Israel has killed 7,000 Palestinian civilians, including 3,000 children, and wounded 18,000 in just 19 days. 19 freaking days is all it took Israel to match Russia's tally. That is a new world record for sure. The part that makes me, you know, laugh or kind of triggers me the most when I listen to Western media or Western government officials talk is when they say Israel has the right to defend itself or anything along this line. When you say defend itself, it means that you're resisting an attacker that is usually stronger than you are. But when you kill 7,000 people, wound 18,000 and destroy 42% of a country's housing, you're not defending yourself, man. You're obliterating a nation. We need your help. Our families and friends are dying. The lucky ones actually die. The less fortunate are the ones who live with the loss of their entire families in the inhumane conditions of Gaza. Talk to your governments. This is your tax money that is funding such massacres. Have some conscience. We're not supporting Hamas, guys. But if the Palestinians could live their lives properly, they will be the first one to stand against Hamas. I'm happy I got the chance to talk to you guys, although I was hoping it would be in a better timing. But nevertheless, take care of yourselves and take care of each other. Goodbye.